Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 114 for September 24th, 2007. Ride the TWiT Party Jet. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible. For your free book and a whole lot more, visit audible.com/TWiT. And don't forget your free chapter of The Chopin Manuscript, available from audible.com/free chapter. Ladies and gentlemen, TWiT has convened, and John C. Dvorak has decided that he's going to play the bad kid in the back of the class throwing spitwads throughout the show today. Just wanted to warn you. He's got his sound effects, so he's not afraid to use them. Dvorak.org/blog, am I correct?
That's one place you can find me, and you can find that's a nexus for all the other places I'm here and there.
Are you getting more sensationalistic on that blog?
No, not really. It's always been kind of sensationalistic.
Because I just want to read you some of the headlines from the recent few posts. Idiots at Oregon DMV find common Dutch name offensive. Is 802.11? Now that's all right. That's all right. Let's see. Bin Laden condemned by mentor. That's all right. Maybe I was wrong. Here's one. Was John Paul II euthanized? That's good. Let's see.
No, he was taken to a farm where you can play and run. And you can visit him anytime.
He's in doggy
we'll get you
heaven.
A new boat.
This is Andy Yannatko from the colossal waste of bandwidth and, of course, the Chicago Sun-Times. Not the same thing.
Not the same thing. One is a simulation of mirror image. You can tell that the CWOB has a goatee, whereas the suntimes.com does not. I'll leave it to you to guess which one is evil.
Easy to tell the difference. Is the new blog also at CWOB, or do you have a new URL for that?
The new blog is having some secret testing done at the Minnesota Salt Flats. If you take a guess as to what the URL might be, you might be able to guess what it is. But basically, it's a test bed so I can teach myself WordPress. Right now, it is ugly, but it's getting better.
I'm going to guess it's delicious.com. Am I right?
It's actually Google. I bought Google last week.
With one O. Tom Merritt is also here. You know him from Buzz Out Loud. He was also for many years executive editor of the Tech TV website, and he is a published author.
I self-published, yes.
Published author. You don't have to say the self. That's deprecating. Self-deprecating.
Hey, Tom, are you in a bucket?
He's not in a bucket.
Sounds like he's in a bucket.
Come out of the bucket.
How did you know?
There's a hole in the bucket.
Dear Liza.
I just purchased your book on Amazon.com. It's Boiling Point.
What book is this?
Boiling
You're
Point.
You're a brave, brave man.
It's good. You used Lulu to publish that.
I did, yes.
So how much money are you going to lose on per book?
You don't lose any money.
I'm actually broke even because, the way Lulu works, every time you publish, the person who's buying the book pays for the publishing. So you don't have to outlay anything unless you want to get an ISBN. You pay $50 to get an ISBN, and I've sold enough to pay for the ISBN. So even.
Is that the ISBN?
You sold $50 worth? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
To me alone.
I looked at those Lulu terms. I thought they stunk.
No, the way Lulu's
put on
demand.
You get to keep all the intellectual property, and you don't pay anything out front.
You don't get any royalty. They take like a piece of the action, and they do this and they do that.
No.
They put a minimum price on how much it is to print one book, and then you can set your price on top of that as far as you want. So you can make your royalty whatever you wish.
You're thinking of something else, John. Lulu is
no. I was looking at the Lulu thing. When you set, you can set your price to $100, but then the more you set your price, the more they have like a commission that they take out of that instead of just taking a flat fee. So they're taking, a piece of that action under all
circumstances. Is that true, Tom? I thought it was just a flat fee.
I thought it was just a flat fee.
Yeah, no.
That's why I picked them.
No.
Are you sure, John?
I know when you do an I now, you may be thinking of the ISBN because when you go through, when you go to try to get into books in print,
I'm not thinking of
the variable rate there, but I think in the when you're just setting your price, you're setting your price.
I'll look it up while we're doing this. But the last time I looked, they took a piece of that price action. So if you started jacking your price up, they were getting like 20% of it or something like that. It just didn't seem right to me.
I like Lulu. This is Michael Rogers' company.
You haven't done a book with Lulu.
No, I haven't.
Rogers.
Isn't it Michael Rogers? No, it's not Michael Rogers. It's
what's his name from Red Hat?
Red Hat guy. That's I confuse the two. Red Hat, MP3.com. They're both, you know, guys.
We spent the past 6 minutes just poking holes in your boat. I'm sure it's a great book. I'm sure you can have a good time publishing it. You're a wonderful, wonderful
person. It's a good book. I'm enjoying it. It's really well written. Anyway.
Are you really enjoying it?
Yes.
We're not really poking holes in his book at all. We're poking
not
holes
the
in
book.
Lulu.
Poking holes in Lulu.
The boat. Exactly. Metaphorically. You're the screen door in his submarine.
But don't forget, Tom's the guy in the bucket. And if you poke holes in a bucket, you know what happens.
Well, let's back up for a second since Tom just published a book, even though he did it on Lulu. Let's find out what this book is
even
about.
Even though he did
by talking to Tom about
Kinko's
it.
Kinko's was involved.
it's a
I'm
PDF
a published
file.
Author. I deserve to be at this conference.
It's an amazing
book. Spiraled out and everything.
What's the book?
The book is called Boiling Point. It's about the breakup of the United States into separate countries, sort of inspired by the Nine Nations of North America by Joel Garreau.
Okay.
There's different people.
I've heard enough. That's fine.
You bored John in the first sentence. Let's move on to tech news. What do you say? And by the way, that's one of the stories. Delicious. Mike Arrington broke this, I think, in TechCrunch. Delicious now has a new look, or will have a new look soon. Yahoo is finally asserting itself on the Delicious meme. And this is going to break some old-timers' hearts. It's going to be delicious.com. No more del.icio.us.
Why?
I don't know. It's too hard.
It's idiotic that they would change something after building a brand like that.
Do you know what the numbers are on Delicious? Like, it's a huge number of people use it.
So why are they changing it?
Because it's Yahoo?
Because well, there's that intelligence test of being able to figure out how to type delicious. DEL.ICIO.US.
Yeah, and see, as an elitist, I like the idea.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I think the problem is that the shareholders were pissed off that they were directing so many of those false click links to all those link farms. That's traffic that should be going to Yahoo every time someone types DE.LIC.
Yeah. That's true. I've done that a few times. Now, I don't know if they're going to retire DEL.ICIO.US. I mean, I would imagine they would keep it. 3 million registered users, 100 million unique URLs bookmarked there. We use it all the time. I mean, if you want to know what we're going to talk about on Twit, you can go to del.icio.us/twit/show number. In this case, 114. You can see our bookmarks.
You don't even have to do that. You just have to have slash Twit, and you'll get, because it's
right.
You know,
it's in order. Sure, you're right.
Yeah.
In order. You're right.
We use it for Buzz Out Loud, too.
Do you?
You're
very good about Buzz Out Loud. Having done Buzz Out Loud, in fact, I think I'm doing it this Tuesday. You send out an email that tells everybody what the show is going to be about. All the stuff I don't do.
Yeah, and I'm doing it with people who are like right next door to me, not even like all the way across the country. I'm just so anal.
Oh, I need somebody like that. No, that didn't come out right. Let's move on to the...
You need somebody. Yeah.
Well, I don't think that came out.
John just figured out why it didn't come
out.
Yeah,
it's not...
Go to Craigslist. There's a lot of people who are interested in finding out about the
deal. Hey, did anybody read David Pogue? I thought this was very good, and actually I should have gotten David Pogue on the show. I will going forward. I thought he wrote a really good article about ringtones, in which he really... He skewers Apple a little bit, not as much as they
do. Yeah, way after the fact.
Yeah, he should have skewered him a little harder. He points out that they're charging less than anybody else, blah, 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 blah. But he does say, I think, really the key fact, which is, why do you have to pay for ringtones at all? You're just playing the song you already own. You know, you're triggering it with a different button.
It's ridiculous. You know, I use a Neo Node N2 for my phone, and essentially any Wave or MP3 file can be a ringtone, and you can set them up for every caller. So if I have 25 people that are on my address book, each one can have an individual ringtone that I just simply download, and it doesn't cost anything. I just don't get what these guys are up to by making people pay for something that should be free.
Will Shipley makes a very similar point in another excellent blog post on this subject, in which he's saying Apple's turning into the new Microsoft, the new monopolist, the new greedy...
Turning?
Yeah, maybe. Well, you know, they just didn't have the market clout to do it before.
Yeah, they've always been a monopoly. It's just no one noticed until they've gotten big enough.
They had actually become a monopoly. Is Apple a monopoly now in terms of the iPod?
They're certainly an end. They want to be an end-to-end provider with you not using anyone else. That's for sure.
They want to be a monopoly, don't they?
Well, they taste like a monopoly, but the thing is that their monopolistic behavior, by and large, helps out the user.
How does having to pay for a ringtone?
Yeah, I'm working on that.
Hence the use of the phrase "by and large." The fact that they're the one company that, in my case, is creating the operating system, the hardware, the iTunes software, the management software, the store software, and the hardware that I play it on means that up until this latest rash of iPhones, it had an unbroken record of being the one music player that would always just install and work. As opposed to every single Windows Media Player device, which has always been just an ungodly ordeal.
And that's the secret of their success. It's easy. And isn't that what customers want? Ease of use?
That has to be considered a feature. Plus, if you want to put your own ringtones on an iPhone, you can do it. There's commercial software for it. There's freeware software that will do it.
Yeah,
I use the AppTap jailbreak program from Null River. Isn't that great? And then Erica Sadoun's... Mail is it Mail Song or something like that?
Okay, you guys.
Ambrose has a nice.
You guys are making me sick here.
What is the name of your phone again, John? What kind of weird phone do you have again?
I use the Swedish Neonode N2. Just came out.
Does that have buttons?
They really make the user.
No, there's no buttons on it. It's totally gesture based.
You're kidding.
It's got a touch screen.
You think he's joking? He's not.
Yeah. Look it up, folks. Neonode.
I think monopoly might be the wrong word here. I mean, I think what we're talking about is like closed platform. Because as long as there's Microsoft and a few other manufacturers of PCs, none of them are monopolies. I mean, you can buy several.
They're not technical.
You can switch
monopolies.
Over to something else. The idea is like they want this closed playground where once you're inside it, you can only play in that playground.
Right.
So
we're using the term in some broad sense, and
it's
you're
not
right.
A technical sense.
By definition, yeah. You're absolutely correct. It's not a pure monopoly,
but it's still
sure would like to be.
Yeah, well, that's the point.
It's still sort of like the theater model of like once we get you inside, you know, you're not allowed to bring any food in, and we're going to overcharge you for the popcorn and
right.
And the other thing is, I don't think there's anything. I mean, I think everybody in the world wants to be a monopolist. So what's the big deal?
That's the goal of being
Ayn Rand has no problems with monopolies.
Right, a successful business. But, that's my point, is that the user gets sucked into this because of ease of use, but ultimately loses choice in the long run.
Well, of course, that's how monopolies work.
Right.
You get all the choice in the world if you build your own hardware, build your own software, and somehow build your own drivers to make them all interface to each other.
But that's the extreme case. Yeah, but the point is, if Apple creates this great end-to-end solution, which consumers like, and all monopolists, that's the point, is we're going to make this great system that's easy to use. Oh, and by the way, as soon as we do, we're going to jack the prices up because we've got you. We own you.
Well, when have they really done that, though?
I think if you look at the iPhone...
On the basis of not jacking up prices, basically saying goodbye to NPC because they don't want to jack up their prices.
I think they jacked up the price on the iPhone, and then when they stopped selling,
they jacked it back down.
What are you throwing out? John, what is that?
Okay.
What is John throwing out? John's throwing something out. What was that?
My notes.
You're starting over, huh?
I think the big deal is that this is sort of like everybody suddenly realizing that, no, Apple Computer is not a bunch of hippies that are all out for peace, love, and the betterment of humanity. Right. They're a company that likes to make money. And up to now, they've been making money in ways that, again, generally tend to benefit the user. But now that it's sort of like the first time you see your dad just a little bit drunk, not dangerous drunk, just you're like, oh, my God, he's human. You know, I think that we're seeing so many things happening in 2007 that a lot of people are shocked to find out that, again, Apple Computer collectively is not on a hillside singing "I'd like to teach the world to sing." They're saying, "Here's a market. We're going to pull it."
This phone is cool. Also, by the way, I just want to say, John, this is a nice phone. I'm looking at this.
What phone?
This Neo Note.
It looks like a bar of dial. It looks like
looks like a bar. I had Cranky Geeks and had Adam Curry on, and he accused the phone of looking like one of those emergency things when you fall down and you can't get up.
I don't care. I think it's very cool looking. I like it.
It's very cool. When you see it, I'll bring it by. You can take a look at it. You'll probably get a kick out of it.
Anyway, I'm sorry, Tom. You were saying something actually intelligent, and I
have no idea.
You can't have that.
I was going to say, I think, and I don't know if it was intelligent or not, but it's the Steve Jobs sort of philosophy that people are coming up against here. And this kind of became apparent to me when I was at the Digibarn talking to that Bruce Damer guy.
That's such a cool place.
Who runs it. It's an excellent place. Go to Digibarn.
How about explaining it to us, to the newbies out there, what the Digibarn is?
Go to Digibarn.com and take a look at it. It's Bruce Damer and Alan Lundell have put together a collection of every computer that's ever existed.
Up in the hills above Santa Cruz. It's kind of remote.
And so he has an Apple II GS sitting right next to the original Mac, and he's explaining how Woz had come with the Apple II GS and made it fully open. You could crack it apart. You could swap the cards in and out. It was all right. about being able to mod it and open access to it. And at the same time, Jobs had pushed forth the first new Mac with the idea of all this openness was killing him, and they made it that one hard shell that you had to get a pair of special right. tools to actually pop it open if you wanted to get inside it. And Jobs' vision is what won. And that's still sort of metaphorically guiding everything. He wants this sort of closed system that you play inside of and you don't move out of because it drives him nuts.
That's Will Shipley's point in his blog post. He's the programmer behind Delicious Monster, which is a brilliant Mac programming firm. He says that's they want Apple. Steve Jobs loves closed systems because you control it entirely end to end. And there is an advantage. You know, look at the problems Microsoft faces trying to get Windows to work on this completely heterogeneous environment with, you know, who knows what's running on that machine.
And I think it's excellent for casual users, right? I mean, you don't want the iPhone to be too complicated for the casual user. You want it to do what it does and never break. And that's the thing. If you put AppTap on it, and start messing around and using it as a Unix machine, an extremely powerful machine, it'll break sometimes. It'll crash. You have to restart it. Right. And he doesn't want that to happen to the casual user.
So let the sophisticated users do what they want, which seems what Apple lets people do with the Apple TV, for instance.
Well, yeah. As long as he doesn't fight the people who are doing jailbreak,
right.
then yeah, I think it's great.
And apparently that's Apple's been a little bit cagey about this, but we talked about this last week. Greg Joswiak, Jaws, says... Nah, go ahead. Put some apps on it. We don't condone unlocking it, but put some apps on it if you want.
Hey,
why don't they condone unlocking it?
Hey, there's other things to talk about.
I know there are. How about Pirate Bay? We talked last week about the fact that Media Defender had its email database stolen. And, of course, in the intervening week, all of the pirate sites and the hackers and the DRM rights, anti-DRM advocates and so forth have been combing through it and have found lots of smoking guns. Pirate Bay now says, we've got the proof we've been expecting for a long time. The big record and movie labels are paying professional hackers, saboteurs, and DDoSers to destroy Pirate Bay's trackers. He says, while browsing through the email, we identified the companies that are also active in Sweden, and we've reported these incidents to the police. The Pirate Bay fires back. The charges are infrastructural sabotage, denial of service attacks, hacking and spamming. And they're reporting Sony, Ubisoft, Activision, Atari, Paramount, Universal, EMI and 20th Century Fox.
I think they should throw the book at them.
I love it. We'll see what happens. But after all of the prosecutions they've been facing from Swedish police at the behest of the movie industry, I think it's nice that the Pirate Bay's got a smoking gun and they're firing back.
Throw the book at them.
They'll never win, but it's no, I think that's good.
It'll be fun to watch.
Fun to watch. And you know what? It gives Pirate Bay, you know, they seem to enjoy this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Also, they're laughing the whole way to
love
the Hall of Justice.
Pirates versus Swedish Police. That sounds like a great movie for Showtime or Cinemax at 1 a.m. I would stay up and watch that.
Does Pirate Bay make any money? They don't have ads. I think they're just...
They have ads.
Do they?
Pirates.
I'm looking at a Cursor Mania ad right
oh,
now.
All right. There you go. They must Cursor make some money.
On their blog. Anyway.
I'm sure they drive a lot of traffic. According to the Canadian Internet Policy and Public Interest Clinic, DRM, copy protection technologies, violate Canadian privacy laws because they gather IP addresses and other personal information. Canada's got a very specific privacy law that prevents that. I don't know if there'll be any repercussions, but I love
throw the
that.
Book at them.
Throw the book at them.
Self-publish it and throw it at them.
Just don't do it through Lulu. I think there's a theme here. Let me see if I can find another throw the book at them. Did you know that it was One Web Day yesterday? We didn't celebrate.
Throw the book. Oh, wait.
Did you know that? This is the second annual One Web Day. I knew John would enjoy this. The mission of One Web Day is simple: to create, maintain, advance, and promote a global day to celebrate online life.
Oh, brother.
I choose to celebrate it every day.
You know, they've got big names and big players behind this. There are workshops, speakers all around the world. I don't know how we missed this.
I think who are these cornballs? Come on, let's go.
I think it's adorable that there are people out there who still think that the web is a community as opposed to just everybody.
Or you know,
the community of computer users. Yes,
it's all of us.
We'll teach you how to store recipes on your desktop home computer.
Oh, yeah. It's being celebrated around the world and in a few cities in the U.S. Not a whole lot, but just a few.
All the guys at my BBS were enjoying it.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not being. Where's it being celebrated? Do we have any photos?
Online.
Tim Berners-Lee made a video just for one web day. You want to hear
it? I'll make a video at the drop of a hat, let me tell you.
Sir, may I say Sir Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web.
Inner tubes.
And if I could get the tubes unclogged, I'd play this for you here. Here he comes, ladies and gentlemen. Tim, I give you Sir Tim Berners-Lee.
Hello, everybody. This is Tim Berners-Lee with a message for everybody involved in One Web Day.
Throw the book at him!
One Web Day. I think it's a wonderful idea. All kinds of wonderful things happened last year, and I'm sure all kinds
he can't think of anything interesting to say about it.
Yeah, sure, give him the hook.
It's a wonderful idea.
I'm actually surprised that it doesn't go like this. Hi, I'm Tim Berners-Lee, and I'd like to congratulate everyone from One Web Day.
And in honor of what the web has become, I'm going to show you a picture of my cat with a lime on his head.
There you go. I can has cheeseburger.
I love that lime
in
picture.
In your web, enjoying your web day.
I am enjoying your web day. Big security flaw, Acrobat Reader this time. Not Microsoft's fault. Acrobat Reader software can compromise Windows PCs. Just send them a malicious PDF file. Windows XP, Windows 2003, Windows Vista is unaffected.
Hooray.
May I say don't open attachments now?
Yeah, there you go. Don't open attachments. But you know, you don't have to open attachments the way most computers are configured if you go to a site with a PDF.
That's true if you're on the if you're using your browser.
And it just opens up.
Yeah. That's nasty.
Yeah, it is nasty.
We all hate that.
Is it if you're using Foxit Reader, does it work? Or do you have to be using Adobe?
That's a good question. You'd have to use Adobe Reader. So if you don't have Adobe Reader 8.1 installed, it would be fine. You could use, you know, another program to read your PDF. So the flaw is with the reader, and it's at least version 8.1. He didn't test other versions.
Can we try to stoke some sort of PDF reader war like there are in the browser wars?
Yeah.
We get the Foxit people against the Adobe.
Yeah,
people.
Let's get Adobe. Is Foxit
let's
free?
Do it.
Yeah.
Let's get Adobe out of this business. I always get, you know, on a Mac, you've got Preview. You can read any PDF file. I always get annoyed that somehow Adobe Acrobat gets installed. I guess Photoshop installs it. It always seems to get installed. I never want it, but it always seems to get installed.
Hey, you know what bugs me even more than that?
No, what, John?
Well, let me tell you.
What bugs you, John C. Dvorak.org/blog?
Well, when you have an older version of Adobe and they ask you if you want an upgrade. So you ask to upgrade, at least with the, and it says, oh, yeah, here we can upgrade, and you get the Yahoo toolbar.
That pisses me off.
And then you can't say no to that.
I know. I agree with you. There's no reason they should be bundling this crap.
What, are they in bed together? I mean, what's the deal with the Yahoo? I don't want the Yahoo toolbar. Hello?
Yahoo's got to be very aggressive about partnerships. I look at what happened to Flock. I used to love Flock as a browser, but now it's become the Yahoo browser. It's kind of unfortunate.
I dislike Yahoo over time.
Is Yahoo worse than Google?
As long as they own Flickr, they can never do anything bad for anybody. I am sunshine and light for any company that has Flickr on it.
You got to talk to Thomas Hawk about that. He's mad about Flickr censorship. In fact, now Flickr has said you can't post pictures of children smoking cigarettes on Flickr. Apparently there's a big category.
Because there's a big demand.
There's
for
a big demand for it. Thomas Hawk, who, by the way, I should point out, is the CTO for Zoomer. A Flickr competitor. But, by the way, one of the most amazing photographers I've ever seen. You're on Pounce, aren't you, Tom?
Yeah.
Subscribe to Thomas Hawk's feeds on Pounce, because he puts a new photograph there every few hours, and it's some of the most beautiful photography I've ever seen. All of it linked to Zoomer, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So he puts a picture up of a kid smoking a cigarette that's a famous picture from the 60s. In fact, I think it's on an album, Green Dinosaurs, something like that. It's an album cover. Waiting for Flickr to kind of get mad at him and take it down. Flickr apparently decides not to. I don't know. Google, 64% of all searches in the U.S. My question, who are these other 36%? What are they using?
MSN? Yeah, really good.
People who
are using their ISP's homepage.
That's
which
exactly
is defaulting
right.
To something else.
They're using Flock. Google is up to 64% from this time last year, where it was 60%. Yahoo, 23%. MSN, 8%. Coming on strong around the courthouse turn, it's ask.com with 3.5%.
Yeah.
You know why Ask got...
I think I use MSN search by mistake every once in a while. How does that happen? I think it's if I happen to have Internet Explorer open,
right.
There's a way where you can just accidentally come up with an MSN search,
right.
And you're like, what? How did that... No, that's not what I wanted.
What is this? What is this MSN?
I actually want to speak in favor of some of the alternatives. Some of the alternatives are really very good.
What do you like?
Believe it or not, I like Ask.com. It's not going to be my default search engine, but when I'm looking for broad experience and broad... When I'm looking for a search that kind of fails a little bit in Google because it's a little bit too vague, I'll just click, instead of using my Google Foo to try to trim it down a little bit, I'll go to Ask.com and boom, number three link is what I'm looking for. Or right there in the sidebar, it says, okay, we think you might be going in one of seven different directions. Two of them are poor and we've removed them because you said you don't want to use that. But here's, it's a much more articulate search.
I think some people like Ask because they have a data hiding feature too. You can explicitly say save no search information.
John's throwing his notes away. Like I can do
I'm
that.
I'm so disappointed. I'm disappointed in Google that they, Gmail has been around for years. Google Search has been around for years, but we haven't seen a real change in the user interface. We've seen some neat features under the hood, but. Are they really telling us that in 1998 they really
use Google most of the time?
It all ended in 1998,
Nothing
my friend.
Nothing happened since then.
Music ended in 81 too, after Joe Jackson's first album, not the second, but the first one.
I got an interview request from Marketplace, the public radio show, because they were at the TechCrunch 40, and PowerSet announced at TechCrunch 40. This is a new search engine that got $12.5 million of funding. And their whole idea is they're going to do natural language processing, and they're using, smart, blah, AI, blah, blah, blah. So they called, hoping that I would say, oh, this is exciting, and I said, yeah, forget it. Google's got it. How could you...
Well, here's my favorite thing, because I actually wrote about this too, is that PowerSet... He's got what, 12.5 million in funding? Google's R&D budget is $2.2 billion. Yeah. Do the math.
Yeah. How are you going to compete against Google? I mean, I'm not saying Google's a be-all, end-all. In fact, I think there's some serious concerns.
Microsoft.
Well, okay. That's true. Good point.
How are you going to compete against the Zoom, against the iPod? I mean, there's room for improvement. There's room for alternative ideas. And again,
what would you do better?
Whenever I see a
that's
product that hasn't changed years, I'm thinking that these are some people who don't care about improvements.
We need a Zoom killer.
I think Google is constantly improving. I'm surprised to hear you say that, Andy. For instance, 2 years ago and a year ago, all these link farms were just polluting Google's results. They've cleaned that up completely.
Yeah, but again, again, I'm not saying they've never changed anything. Just today, I was at my mom's house, and she wanted to know how many cups were in a pint or something, and I'm like, wooden sailing ships were plying the Atlantic the last time that the last time anybody really used this stuff. But of course, I had my laptop in front of me, so okay.
You Google cups pint, right?
One pint in cups, and it answered back, two. Okay, cool, excellent. But again, I'm just asking the question: is this main search page where you enter search terms and you get one plain list ordered by whatever secret mojo they're using to decide what's important and what's not? Is that the end all of the idea of internet search? Isn't
there the interface, or
I'm talking about the search box?
No, the results.
I'm talking about the way it organizes its results and the way that it presents them to you. Ask.com and Yahoo and the rest have some interesting types to it where they're saying, well, are you interested in the medical version of this? Are you looking in the geographic version of this? Oh, and incidentally, if you are interested in the geographic version of it, there are a bunch of other places in the world that tend to be very, very closely linked to this.
I don't know. I keep trying these other ones. I change my default search in Firefox to Yahoo or Ask. I do it for a few days, and it's always back to Google.
Exactly.
I think they've got something that works well presentation-wise.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a good basic search. I'm just curious to know why they never, ever add anything to the basic look of it.
Because the number one result is almost always the result you want.
Not for me. And plus, again, you can say the same thing about Windows, but how many people in this group think that Windows is the best operating system out there?
I do.
TechCrunch.
Yeah, but you're talking to a bar.
I'm just kidding. I kid.
You're a kidder. Everybody knows that John C. Dvorak is a Solaris fan. TechCrunch 40, other is stories from that big event in San Francisco this week. The number one, I guess they won the $50,000 TechCrunch prize, a site that I fell for 5 minutes and then terrifiedly begged to cancel my account, mint.com. Anybody play with this at all?
No. Let's check it out.
MINT.com. We are refreshing money management. They won the TechCrunch $50,000 prize.
Yeah.
The free automatic online way to manage your money. So what do? You sign up.
You stay away.
Yeah, stay well away. I don't know what I was thinking. You know what? That smooth, minty, fresh Web 2.0 interface seduced me. You enter in your logins to all your financial services.
Oh, I would never do that.
Oh, I did. And, you know, your bank accounts, your credit cards, and then it creates a nice page of what you're spending money on, and they promise to help you save money. All I've ever got was a Discover card. It'll save you $800 by, you know, I mean, clearly they're making money on this. They've got some funding.
Mail a scan of your thumbprint, too.
I'm sure they're very trustworthy people, but I am extremely paranoid about my financial information. I would never want to give it to an online
company
like this.
I don't know what I was thinking. And I read the privacy and security, and they're really good about all that. They're trustee certified.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. You know, the one thing about all those licenses, those EULAs or whatever you want to call them, those things that are online, the terms of service, you know, every one of them says it can be changed at any point without notification.
And already they've got all my information.
Right. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say what you're going to say, so you should probably say it.
Well, what I was going to say is that if you allow that to happen, then you always get the situation, which is the reason you do contracts, by the way, is that you have somebody who's your best buddy and he's going to do all this stuff for you. But what happens when he sells the company to some corrupt guy, which happens all the time? These companies are traded like playing cards. It's like, you know, what can happen after that? Because they've got all this information. They can change the terms of service at the drop of a hat. Until that kind of thing ends, I wouldn't trust any of these websites.
And that's why, by the way, all of our Twitter agreements are handshake-based.
So, terms of service can be changed at any moment.
At any moment.
Terms of service are just such a leaky sieve anyway. Nobody knows if they're really valid or not. So a company could just go off and start selling your financial information, and then you'd have to fight it out in court. Forget it.
I don't know what I was thinking. And by the way, the Chronicle picked this up. This was a huge story. A lot of people obviously looked at this and said, ooh, cool. And I also should point out that you can do the exact same thing with Quicken or Money on your own computer with your own login securely.
With an encrypted file on a removable flash drive that you keep in a safe.
I don't know why I was – I got sucked in by – thank you, Mike Arrington. Anyway, so
it was the minty cool green, though. It does soothe.
Look
you.
At it. It's a Web 2.0 seducer.
Mm-hmm.
Look at it. So shiny.
Too slick for my
taste. It's the way
taste.
It's dressed.
It has a little bit of a kind of a too slick, a little too, rah, rah. I don't like the look of it.
It's probably run by the Motion Picture Association of America. Media.
By the way, if anyone wants a good laugh, go to Dvorak.org/blog and read my terms of service.
I could just imagine.
And it's legal, by the way.
Oh, you had a lawyer write it?
I took it from a boilerplate.
Yeah.
But I modified it a little bit.
Slightly. Google is also, now I don't know if this is a true story or not, because it comes to us from The Guardian, always a guardian of truth and justice and the British way. But apparently the British government is thinking of doing a U.S.-style spectrum auction of the 900 megahertz frequencies, just as we are auctioning off the 700 megahertz frequencies in January. And according to The Guardian, Google's already looking to bid, probably with the same notion.
That's the idea that I would make up if I were writing this story, but I mean, how do we know?
According to The Guardian, Google is considering a move into the U.K. wireless market.
Well, they're laying transatlantic cable. They're definitely into the 700 megahertz auction in some way. If they're going after all this bandwidth to get into that, they're going
to
organize
what?
The world's information.
To make a Google phone, to do Wi-Fi, what would you do?
Well, there's that Google phone that we think is probably going to come out that HTC has been working on. That's the big rumor.
Based on, and it would be a 700 megahertz or a 900 megahertz phone?
Well, it could be down the line. You know, they get into the business of partnering up to make phones, and then they start making devices that run their software on it, and then they provide you the bandwidth. I mean, you want to talk about monopolies. There's a serious monopoly in the offing there.
Yeah.
Yep. And how about this for an idea from Google? Premium services.
Have they don't have anything like that, do they?
Tiered internet.
High-speed, premium, dedicated services.
I'd buy it. Because I trust Google.
$10 a month.
I'll give them my bank account number.
Yeah.
This just bothers me sort of fundamentally, because I remember a day back in '87 when it was actually legal to just tune into cell phone conversations, because that
was never legal.
Yes, it was. The third party rule was effective. Yes, it was. You could go into any store and buy them, and it was perfectly legal. There was a change made in the mid '90s when cell phones suddenly became popular, and that's when they started locking down the frequencies.
Huh.
All right. Well, I remember. Okay, go ahead. But I remember listening in myself.
Okay, but because
Wozniak used to love to do that. That was one of Steve's favorite games.
Right. I had my Bearcat scanner, because I remember specifically, because I had my Bearcat scanner that was being sold in all 50 states, and then I needed to upgrade to the next one, but then that was the time when I had to rush out, and get the ones with the right serial numbers, because when the ones that were manufactured before a certain date were illegal, the ones manufactured after them had a certain diode added to it, and you'd have to actually missed out, but I found plans where you could snip the diode using very, very tiny little pliers and get that band back. But I mean, there used to be a principle that said that if you're broadcasting something over the air, then by definition, this must be for the public good. Right. And of course, there was sort of like loose implementation of that, but that was always a principle. This idea of saying, well, we're gonna give these frequencies to Google to make, to basically do whatever they want with it, just to Google subscribers. That just seems kind of nuts.
Well, I would hope they wouldn't do that. And that's Google was pretty clear they wanted open, access to these frequencies. They wanted to force wholesaling and so forth in their proposed rules for the U.S. auction.
It's certainly one of the better ways to fight the tiered internet is for Google to go out there and just buy up a bunch of
bandwidth, your own internet,
and make it available at a competitive price.
Yeah, build your own internet. So it's that time of year again, the time of year when the billionaires fall from the trees. The Forbes richest people in America list is out.
I got my fingers crossed.
You got to have $1.3 billion to get on the list.
Oh, a bunch of comic books last year.
Yeah.
Fell farther behind.
Number one, once again, Bill Gates. But he has $59 billion. He'd have more, $102 billion, if he hadn't given all that money away to charity. Fool.
Dope.
Fool. Anyway, $59 billion still makes him the richest man in the world, right ahead of Warren Buffett, who's got $52 billion.
Buffet.
Sheldon Adelson. His number
Isn't
three.
That amazing?
How'd Shelley get up there?
I don't know. He sure made his move. He did some great business in those casinos, and he's got a big one opening up in Macau, or I guess it's open already. I'm not sure.
Sheldon was famous for starting for Comdex. In fact, he was the heart and soul of Comdex.
He was a sharper operator than any of us imagined.
He sold Comdex to SoftBank. There was a good move in 95 for $862 million. Wow. And what's it worth now? Nothing.
Doesn't exist.
He bought the Sands with the money for $128 million, demolished it, built the Venetian, and it's been nothing but big bucks ever since. $28 billion for Shelley. He's too old to enjoy it, though. Larry Ellison, number four, the king of Oracle. So far, it's tech is in there. Sergey Brin, the Google guy, is number five, $18.5 billion. His partner, Larry Page, same amount of money.
All the good that does us.
Have you been following this brouhaha about them parking the corporate jet at NASA?
Oh, yeah. The three jets. They have three jets.
The party jet, though, is the one where the 767.
Big one. They have a big 767, and they got a couple either Challengers or G5s or whatever the heck they got.
And NASA, it was right across the street, well, across the highway from Google. They've got that.
Yeah,
great,
you can walk over.
You can walk over to your jet.
Saves energy.
They've never, ever leased that space to anybody. $1.8 million a year, they gave it to Google, and I guess they said in return for consideration.
Well, Google supposedly is going to put some instruments on their plane to do some analysis of, when they're flying around. They can download some data that NASA can use for whatever.
They'll put weather balloons on the Segways.
What's the big deal? I don't understand why people are so... This is such a gossipy story. I don't
understand why... They're incensed about it.
So it's an airstrip, and they have a plane, and they wanted to park there, and they said yes. What's the big
deal?
Why do I care?
They're paying $1.8 million to the...
yeah, they're paying for it.
I'll tell you what the deal is. It says it's never been allowed by anybody else to... no one has been allowed to use it. People have been begging to use this thing because it's right in the middle of Mountain View, and the public around it doesn't want it to turn into a commercial operation. So they've said no to everybody, but now all of a sudden Google shows up, they say yes to them. That's the reason it's a scandal.
No one says no to Google. And the irony is that Forbes is also declaring that these guys are the greenest billionaires. They're very green because they drive Priuses. They don't mention how much fuel the 767.
Yeah, the party jet.
I'm going to drive a Prius over to my party jet.
Is that a hybrid party jet?
I don't think so. They're pumping millions into the development of a hybrid car that can go 100 miles on a gallon of fuel. They're going to fly the party jet right over there. Let's see, other tech billionaires. There's a whole bunch of them on the list. Michael Dell's in the top 10. Good for him. He's number
eight. Where's Paul Allen?
Paul Allen used to be in the top, was number three, wasn't he? He's not even in the top 10 now.
Yeah, he used to be. He used to be right up there.
What happened? He sold Tech TV.
That's what killed him.
You know, you think he's got $16.8 billion. You'd think he'd get his teeth whitened.
Yeah.
Number 11 on the list, Paul Allen. That's a little ad hominem.
Bubbling under.
He's bubbling under. He was number three. His fortune since he sold Tech TV is down 53%.
Gates, it used to be what? Gates, Ellison, and Allen?
Yeah.
Right there all three at the top?
Yeah. I think, and then Berkshire Hathaway kind of zipped
and
in
Hathaway.
There.
Yeah.
Anyone who owns his own space fleet, I'm not willing to make fun of him. I think he's doing something right in his life.
I think in terms of, you know, your actual life experience, the difference between having $36 billion and $16 billion is probably negligible.
Yeah, it's kind of like, isn't it usual, anybody in this conversation, were you the valedictorian of your high school?
No.
Good, okay. Because in my experience, and this is, I've discussed this with other people, usually the difference between being number one in your class and, say, number 10 to 15 in your class, in terms of what college you get into, is a negligible thing. But there are some people who cannot live unless they get that number one spot. That's what it's like for people who pay attention to this billionaires list.
Yeah, I don't know. It makes a difference if you're down 53%. In your personal wealth,
$600 million.
You know,
my robots will have to be made out of gold instead of diamond.
I might confess to a small bit of Schadenfreude in this at all. I mean, it's just
give it up, Leo.
I'm a little bitter. It's not the list. It's Paul Allen. That's I'll tell you the truth. The Walton family occupies 73 of the top 100.
Wow.
Well, I don't know what it is.
You know, the funny story about Paul Allen, since we're on the topic. Is, you know, he did own Tech TV for a while, and he's pretty much the one who shut it down or sold it off.
Exterminated.
But during the era of Tech TV, we had one show that was the absolute, even though I think Screensavers was a good show, but the absolute slickest show we had, I think, was Internet Tonight.
Absolutely.
Which was extremely well produced.
Well written.
I worked on it once, and it's like, wow, this is you're like being on a big network.
Yeah, they were actually
and
television
Paul,
people. Yeah.
Paul, out of the blue, regardless of how many people were watching it or were not watching it, took a dislike to the show, I think because he disliked one of the hosts, and just killed it.
You know, it's funny. I was told always that he hated the Screensavers, too, but the ratings for the Screensavers was the best ratings on the network, so he could never kill that.
I can't see why he'd hate the Screensavers.
He hated that show, I was told.
Well, I'm not sure he liked any of the shows, frankly. I mean, he wanted a Mac show, and he wanted, like, 14 hours of news programming. It was the only thing I ever heard he wanted.
And, of course, 1 week after he started the 14 hours of news programming, he decided he didn't want it. Which, that's another story for another day.
Yeah.
Hush. Let's not go back down memory lane, but it's kind of, I mean, it's just, people are still interested in it. Twit wouldn't exist if Tech TV hadn't existed, so.
People keep touting this or that as the next Tech TV.
Actually, you know what? Maybe the next Tech TV, as I look at what they're doing over at Revision 3, I have to say almost everybody's over there except you and me, Tom.
I know.
I'm not over there.
Yeah, John's not over there either.
John, you and me and Tom, but
and
look,
Roger
got,
Chang.
And Roger Chang and Robert Herron, they're kind of holdouts. They're still at ZD. But now they've just announced there's going to be a new show called Techzilla. That's Patrick Norton's new show.
Yeah, it's just a DLTV show. Come on.
No, wait a minute. And his co-host, Jessica Corbin, and if you listen to the description, it's the screensavers that are going to take calls on the show. They're going to have, I mean, it's
so they stole your show.
They didn't steal it. They borrowed it. Anyway, I'm not bitter. I'm glad. I'm happy. I'm thrilled. I think it's wonderful.
Why would you be happy and thrilled?
Because they're slow. You're goading me now, John. It won't work. Because they're trying to rebuild Tech TV. It's very clear what Revision 3 is up to. They're even building a studio that's capable of live broadcasting. They're building a big TV studio. They're spending that venture funding. It's pretty clear what they're up to.
How much money did they get in venture funding?
What was it?
Eight? 7 million or
seven or eight million? Yeah.
Yeah. But I think one of the interesting things too is
Greylock.
I don't know where it came
from. Greylock. That's the people who invested in Dig as well.
Okay. But I think one of the interesting things is that there is room now with the way things are to do
you bet
a lot more than Tech TV ever could have done with technology programming in all kinds of different ways.
Well, and there's frankly no room on network television for tech programming.
Nobody wants that anymore. Revision 3 is one way of doing it. CNET's one way of doing it. TWiT's one way of doing it. ZD is doing it in similar ways. I mean, and there's room. There's people with the appetite to watch it. And because it's on the internet, it's a niche market, and you can actually advertise it a little easier. So the technology has gone past what Tech TV ever was.
Yeah, I agree.
And you can have it widely spread from a lot of different people in a lot of different
ways.
Hey,
what did Tech TV charge for a commercial? Does anybody know?
Gosh, I don't know.
It wasn't much.
It wasn't much, and they didn't know what they were doing. I have another story if you want to hear it.
Yes.
So I go to New York, where they have their head sales office, and someone says to me, oh, you got to meet this woman. She's the head of sales of the whole operation. And I forgot what her name was. But anyway, she wasn't there. So I started to leave, and she goes by me. And I say, oh, you must be so-and-so. And she says, yes, I am. And who are you? And I said, well, I'm John Dvorak. And she says, oh, that's interesting. What do you do?
Oh, dear.
And I said, I work at Tech TV. Oh. Then she pauses and goes, doing what? And I said, I have a daily show that's been on for 2.5 years. And then she skulks off.
Yeah, must have forgotten that. She probably knew that, but forgot.
How about maybe these idiots that were working there, how about if they maybe watched the network?
They didn't own televisions, you know.
I would be willing to bet, though, that advertising dollar-wise, CNET, DLTV, Revision 3, and certainly TWiT make 10 times more money per spot than Tech TV ever did.
You talk about CPMs, yeah, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Well, not even raw numbers because we have a larger audience than Tech TV ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more reach.
There's more reach. In fact, unfortunately, we don't count international listeners on TWiT because all the agencies are U.S. only, so we don't get monetized for that. But that's one thing Tech TV never had was an international audience, and we've got a
There was Tech TV International. It was actually the only profitable arm in business.
Oh, yeah. That's because they sold shows to.
They sold shows, and networks. They also had networks. They had a whole network in China.
That's what am I saying? Of course, in the Tech TV Canada, where I work now,
which is still around,
was profitable and is still profitable. Yeah, that's a good point. So I take that back. But I think we do have a larger, more than 20% of our audience is outside the U.S. for TWiT anyway, and I think that's probably true for most podcasts. Anyway, let me take a break and mention Audible.com. They're actually launching something pretty exciting, and I want to talk about it because they're launching it on the 25th, but we are the first to talk about it on this show, and it is pretty exciting. You know that Audible.com is a sponsor of the TWiT Network, audible.com/TWiT. You can subscribe to Audible and get a coupon for a free book, a credit towards a free book, no obligation. You don't have to stick around. But now there's something else you might want to do at Audible. There's an event coming up. It's going to start on the 25th, but if you go to audible.com/TWiT now, you can download the first chapter. I think this is kind of an interesting Audible. This is the first time Audible's done a book just for Audible. It's called The Chopin Manuscript.
There's a Chopin manuscript in here. It's believed to be part of a stash the Nazis squirreled away in a church in Kosovo. Believed? It's a forgery. It's not in Chopin's hand. It's been folded, mistreated. And
15 thriller writers are going to collaborate on this, one chapter after another. You just heard Alfred Molina, who's the narrator, is one of the best actors at Audible.com. And they're going to give you a free chapter. Jeffrey Deaver wrote the first chapter. All you got to do is go to audible.com/twit to claim your chapter. And I think this is actually a very exciting promotion that we are really thrilled to be a part of. So because even if you've already signed up and you're already a subscriber, you can get a copy of that chapter now for free. Just audible.com/twit is the place to go. We do thank Audible for their support. I'm going to be listening. Some of the biggest names, Jeffrey Deaver, David Hewson, James Grady. It's kind of an interesting, I don't know how it's going to work. They're each writing a different chapter, one after the other. It's kind of an interesting collaboration. And then Deaver starts it, but Deaver gets to write the last two chapters. So I guess he gets to wrap it all up. The Chopin manuscript, they call it the most diabolical game of pass it on ever conceived, with today's top thriller writers picking up the story where another one left off. Audible.com/twit. We thank them for their support. See, Tom, you could have done that with Boiling Point.
I just started the first chapter and start passing it around?
Yeah.
I'll do that with John.
It's an interesting way to work.
You want to take chapter two?
Yeah, no problem. Let's do it. I need 10 other guys.
That'd be fun.
Can you imagine that most of the book would be you trying to make up for somebody else's screw up and what you think it should be?
Well, yeah, and us trying
and then
to
it turned
screw
out
it
up was...
for the person you pass it on to. Like, hey, let's see them write their way out of this.
You have to do that. But the other one was that you follow up and you go, but it was just a dream.
Every chapter.
And then he got out of the shower.
One.
See, now that's, you have to cooperate.
Wow, that was a really interesting TV show we just saw. But now let's take a look at this brand new case we've just clicked.
You have to cooperate. You can't be fighting each other.
Writers cooperate. That's an interesting concept. Let me write that down.
It is. It's an interesting idea. I'm looking forward to listening to it anyway. It's a chapter by chapter. You can listen for free. audible.com/twit. You had a book that you wanted to talk about too, Andy. I don't want to co-opt your book recommendation.
No, because I'm a big fan of this sort of stuff, so I tend to recommend lots of stuff. I don't want to dominate everything. I did have a book picked out for the last time that I didn't get to do.
Tell us about it. What's fun?
Which is by Ellis Peters. It's a mystery series featuring a Benedictine monk in medieval times.
Oh, Brother Cadafael. Oh, yeah. Great. That's wonderful.
It's one of those premises that as soon as I heard about it, and I heard about it through a promo on PBS for a mystery series they actually did based on the books, it was, oh my God, that's so totally a mystery I could get into. You think about how they would investigate crimes in medieval times, and especially what if a religious man were investigating a murder or a theft or all kinds of malfeasance that's taking place during a time of great civil war. Brother Cadfael came to the order, became a monk in his 40s after a whole career of being a soldier. Fighting wars throughout Europe and the Middle East. He, as he's fond of saying, he came late when called, but he was indeed called. But for that reason, the other monks in the order don't really trust him that much as they would someone who grew up, who was a man of the cloth to begin with. But nonetheless, he has knowledge of the outside world and what people are really, really like. He also has knowledge of science and medicine that a cloistered monk really doesn't have. And so, partly at their behest and partly on his own, he winds up being the person they go to figure out, well, look, all these sacred relics were stolen out of the abbey, and there's a dead guy on the front lawn. Okay, let's call in Cadfael. And using just the techniques that would be available to him at that time, being not just a man of science but also a man of faith, it really is interesting to see how you could have a character even behave in that sort of situation, particularly in this day and age when every murder is about, okay, let's bring out the green lasers and some weird lighting, 14 more computers. Well, are we going to think about like the sort of personality? I don't know. We need more green lasers. That'll solve the problem. More green lasers.
I love it.
I've actually never heard that dialogue, but...
Did you ever read Umberto Eco's The Name of the Rose? Similar idea, mystery monk, 1327. Yeah. I love that book.
Excellent book. Yeah.
Oh, so we have any more tech news?
Yeah,
here,
we have lots more. We love talking about books. You can't help it.
On audible.com, which is recorded as a system of ones and zeros, John, also known as binary.
There you go. Name of the Rose, by the way, is also available on audible.com, read by Theodore Bacall, which must be great. I'd have to listen to that.
one of the greatest Columbo murders ever. Speaking of murder,
Columbo.
One of the greatest.
Theodore Bacall was one of the bad guys.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. IQ murder case. One of the best six episodes of Columbo ever.
Oh, really? Well, there you go. He's the king of trivia there.
Oh,
I wish you'd do a Sulu voice instead.
By the way, I gave you the wrong address. It's audible.com/twit. That's the free book offer. But you can all, if you want to get the free chapter, it's audible.com/free chapter. audible.com/free chapter. And that's,
that'll teach people to stop listening.
There you go. And yeah, there you go. And you can download it, which others can listen to it streaming, but it's only at that URL. And it's only being mentioned on the Twit podcast. So I guess they're probably doing this to see if we're effective. audible.com/free chapter.
I think more, if we want to get back to the news, we have to get to the story about breast is repressed on Facebook.
Yes. We actually, did we talk about that last week?
No.
We talked about it on one of the shows. I do too many shows now. It's
yeah,
a woman.
How many shows
she's a lactivist. Do you know what a lactivist is?
This is a anti-formula person?
Yeah, she's a lactation activist.
Uh-huh.
I think we did talk about this last week.
Formula will kill your baby.
And there's a picture.
It's worth reprising.
There's a picture of her.
Reprising, as it were.
Picture of her breastfeeding. You can't see anything. But for some reason, Facebook decided to pull that picture off. Now, this actually reminds me of the Thomas Hawk story as well. These are private sites. It's not censorship when a private site says, look, we don't want that kind of picture on there.
No, it's not.
They're allowed to do that. Flickr is not a public resource, nor is Facebook.
No, so you're taking the side of the censors.
Yes.
You're taking the side of the censors.
Yes.
Come on, Andy, get him.
Leo,
I guess this didn't go.
Oh, no, I'm just saying that.
He's swinging. He's getting his cricket bat and he's just winding it up.
No, it's like, you know, as more time goes by on the Internet, I realize that. It just like getting a dial-up connection, there's always that first screech before the actual data comes in, and that's always been the case when these controversies arise.
Right, I agree.
There are people who want to complain because, I'm the champion, the standard bearer of truth and justice, and I'm going to stick it to these corporate behemoths, and then a week later, it's like, okay, listen, thank you.
I guess it's okay.
The guys that want to say, don't tase me, bro. I'm being tased now. YouTube.com/1148, everybody who's going to be seeing this on Flickr, you know. And then a week later, you find out what it's really about. And then you find out that both sides actually had something rational and reasonable to say.
Right.
I mean, on the one side, yeah, Flickr is a private concern, but also they have sort of a covenant with their users to at least give the appearance of being an open forum for people to post anything they want.
Well, what they do with these forbidden pictures is, I think they move them to an area of, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think they delete them. I think they move them to an area of, possibly offensive. They flag them.
Yeah, I know.
I was hoping for a better response than that. Tom, go get him.
Well, the question is not about censorship. The question is about, well, you know, what do they have? They have the right to do whatever they want. We don't have to keep going to their site and using their service. So it's all about, you know, is this something we want to put up with? From the beginning of the first time I ever deleted someone's post from my own message board in 1996 and they claimed censorship, I've hated this idea of like, no, it's the Internet. Everything is free. It's like, no, it's my site. I can delete you if I want. But you don't have to come to my site. And that's the thing with Facebook. If this really upsets you, then don't go there anymore. Take your account away.
Go to Lactivist. Be a Lactivist.
Just the other day, I was designing the page on my blog that people will see when they're posting stuff, when they're posting responses. And the first thing I did was design a logo that said, remember, here on the blank.com, the First Amendment only applies to me.
There you go.
There you go. That's
see, he's not going to beat me, John. Ha ha!
No, none of them are. You got a bunch of yes men working for you tonight, Leo.
The smiley face turned 25 this week.
I hate the smiley face.
You know, it's up for a debate. We're not absolutely sure this story is true.
The professor
he claims it. This guy claims it.
Well, no, to his credit, Scott Fallman, who's a professor at CMU, has the posting where he proposed it. He says, I've never seen any hard evidence that it was in use before the post. I've never run into anybody who claims to invent it before I did, but it's always possible, I'm quoting him, that someone else had the same idea. It is a simple and obvious idea, after all. We're talking about the sideways smiley face, not the happy face that started in the 70s, but the colon dash right paren.
No, but his original one was a colon. Yeah, right. I'm sorry. Colon dash right paren, which is deteriorated to just colon paren.
I don't like that because that looks like it's a squished happy face. Why do people do that? That's squished.
I do. It's what I do. It's easier. It's one less character.
Bandwidth. Exactly.
Save bandwidth.
Yep, exactly. Andy's right. You save 30%, over 30% of bandwidth by taking that dash out.
If you're using the dash, you are costing the company you work for money.
It's like the time when Iron Man had a nose molded into his mask. It just didn't look right.
There's always a comic book reference. I just got to point that out.
Sometimes it's a comic book reference. Sometimes it's relevant, Leo.
The smiley face, though, doesn't have a nose. It's the original 70s smiley face. So maybe it's more accurate not to put the nose. It seems like they're smooshed together. Do any of you use the raspberry face where you do the colon dash or no dash P? Or is that
I've tried very hard throughout my entire lifetime never to use emoticons.
You don't use any?
I can't say I've never used one because I have.
You have to use it.
But it's time for my emoticon lecture.
I really try not to.
Oh, good. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Not that long.
Let's hear it.
Emoticons serve a useful purpose, and I remember when they first appeared on the scene, probably because of this guy and some others. And all these,
you don't have emotions in a written communication, is that it?
There's all these writers and all, like yourself, and all these professors. Oh, you know, you should be able to express yourself without using stupid symbols. The fact of the matter is, the email and electronic communication has some other effect on people, and they always take offense to things easily.
They do.
That you needed to come up with some new model, and this model has got the emoticons in it, so I don't have a problem with them.
I actually use it for that reason.
So lame to say, like, but if you're offended, I put a colon and a closed parenthesis. Well,
not so much that, but there's some language that can be ambiguous if you don't have gestures associated with it. So there are some, I do use them sometimes, but also always when I'm looking, you always do that last read of an email before you click send, and you're like, oh God, that could really, really set the world on. It's coated in gasoline and strike a match if they don't think I'm being serious.
It's true. If you're a good writer, though, you could craft it subtly to convey the exact nuance.
Read your email in a British accent out loud.
I'm so sorry,
sir. And then fix it. It works every time.
I do believe you are an ignorant slut. I have to confess to using it. It's a form of laziness because it's a way of saying, you know, this is meant in jest.
No, it's not. It's a form of efficiency.
Efficiency.
Why not just put LOL or ha or he?
No, I don't do LOL.
I do it.
You do? Dvorak, you will put ROTFL in an email?
No, not necessarily RO, because I will only put the truth. So I actually have to be rolling on the floor.
John so Dvorak. Many people are lying when they write
the
ROTFL.
Streets of Palo Alto with a single lamp looking for an honest man.
I believe that most people are indeed lying when they put ROTFL.
Couple I'm 100% behind you there, John.
Couple of quick stories. A recent study says video games do, in fact, hurt your GPA. First-year students whose roommates brought a video game player to college studied 40 minutes less each day on average, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research. That translates into first-semester grades that were 0.241 points lower on the 4.0 grade scale.
Huh. Do you know how important those 40 minutes were going to be? That was the 40 minutes that was going to turn it all around for you.
You shouldn't have brought a deck of cards to college when I was a kid. How many people wasted away their time playing bridge, poker, and hearts?
I was going to say, did they take the games away and see if the GPA went back up? Or is this just the type of people who bring games or the type of people who weren't going to study anyway?
Losers!
You're right, Tom.
They're all losers.
It's not a double-blind study. It's a bogus report just to ruin the gamers. I'm not buying it.
Wow. Well, then you probably don't like the idea of... who is this? The guy Thomas Thompson? Not Fred Thompson. The other guy in Florida who wants to keep Halo 3.
Jack Thompson?
Jack Thompson wants to keep Halo 3 out of Florida. So you,
that guy's... What kind of an idiot is he?
Crackpot.
Yeah, I understand some shaggy-haired outsider with a Volkswagen just moved into town. And he's going to have a town meeting against this. He's bought a warehouse just outside the town limits where they're going to play a tournament network.
Thompson thinks that he's being made fun of in GTA.
GTA,
too.
Yeah. He says there's a Second Amendment lawyer who looks just like me. He wishes. Also, according to another study, text messages boosts young voter turnout. Researchers ran their tests in the November 2006 election. Text reminders were sent to 4,000 young voters. And apparently, The study showed that voter turnout rates rose by 4% among the young voters who were texted.
Not even statistically valid, is it, at that level?
No. Your point is, although it does make sense. I mean, qualitatively.
Yeah, send them a text message and vote. And by the way, it's a lot cheaper than door-to-door canvassing.
I'm sure this wasn't American Idol voting, because I could see how that would really have dramatic effects.
Because you're already right there, yeah.
You know Obama and Clinton are both going to use text messaging. You know they are.
If we could actually vote via text message for the president,
there you go.
I think voter turnout would be huge.
Yeah. Press 1 to vote for Clinton. Press 2 for Obama.
Ryan Seacrest talking to Bill, you know, Hillary Clinton and John McCain. And
ladies and gentlemen, I think we've done enough for one day. I want to thank our guests, our panelists, I should say. They're really not guests. They're paid to play. Tom Merritt,
what we're doing.
The author of Boiling Point. Available at Amazon.com right now. And who cares how much Lulu gets? Tom gets some of it. You can also catch him on CNET TV at CNETTV.com and every single weekday on Buzz Out Loud with the wonderful Molly Wood. Who had
you coming Tuesday?
I'm coming Tuesday.
All right.
I'll be there Tuesday, 10 a.m.
That's right.
I won't miss it. And I just hope you have some better news than I had.
Boy, there's not much news this week, was there?
It's funny. Tech news really is cyclic, and there are a lot of weeks there's no good news. Don't you find that?
Yeah, definitely. There are weeks where you're just like, wow, maybe I'll just read the user-friendly cartoons.
Yeah, I'd love to take those weeks off, but our audience demands that we produce new podcasts every week.
Oh, there was plenty of news.
I think this actually was a good week for us. But that's just because we had such a great panel. Andy Anatko also, thank you so much. His new site will be coming soon to a browser near you, but meanwhile, CWOB.com and, of course, the Chicago Sun-Times. And we see him every week on Mac Break Weekly on Tuesdays.
Yes, quite awesome.
Thank you, Andrew. And finally, last but not least, the star of our show, Mr. John C. Dvorak, who played not one sound effect during the entire show. I'm stunned.
The man of the future is the man who controls the infinite strength of the spirit.
There you go. Dvorak.org/blog.
I got to plug that thing in somehow.
Yeah, you got to get that plugged into the feed there so you can.
Yeah, I think that's doable.
I think we have the technology.
If somebody has a suggestion, I can take it at dvorak.org/blog.
Are you launching any new shows on Podshow anytime soon?
We're working on a couple, but there's nothing
stealth mode.
You know, there's nothing that's been finalized in terms of format. So, right now, I just do Tech 5, and that's about it.
Cool. I thank you all for being here. We'll see you next week. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can. I don't know if I buy those rumors. You buy those
rumors? The Draco and the Scorpio?
I like the name Draco. Sounds like it's a
Malfoy.
Harry Potter.
I have an editor in Croatia named Drago.
Drago's a
Gallic.
Great name.
Drago is a great name.
Does he
name.
Say Drago or Drago?
I don't know.
Drago's his first name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drago.
There was a pitcher, Dick Drago, for the Red Sox back then.
I'll ask him if it's Drago or Drago. I never thought of it. I think it's Drago, but maybe it is Drago.
Such a badass. His name is Drago Drago. Nobody.
Drago Drago. That's a good. Hey, I'm stealing that one. Drago Drago.
What's the middle D stand for? You don't want to know.
Drago D Drago.
Drago
or Drago D Drago. D Drago. And Drago D, and then you say, what's the middle name? Is Donald.
Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Let's go around.